I knew Derry as well as he knew me, and that isn't saying a whole lot. No kidding. I got a feeling he's going to be asked to start the fireworks around here. He a pretty good bopper? He meant rumbler. Those Brumley boys have weird vocabularies. I doubt if half of them can read a newspaper or spell much more than their names, and it comes out in their speech. I mean, you take a guy that calls a rumble bop action, and you can tell he isn't real educated. Yep, I said, but why him? He shrugged. Why anybody else? I looked our outfits over. Most greasers don't have real tough builds or anything. They're mostly lean and kind of panther-looking in a slouchy way. This is partly because they don't eat much, and partly because they're slouchy. Derry looked like he could whip anyone there. I think most of the guys were nervous because of the no-weapons rule. I didn't know about the Brumley boys, but I knew Shepherd's gang were used to fighting with anything they could get their hands on. Bicycle chains, blades, pop bottles, pieces of pipe, pool sticks, or sometimes even heaters. I mean, guns. I have a kind of lousy vocabulary, too, even if I am educated. Our gang never went in for weapons. We're just not that rough. The only weapons we ever used were knives, and shoot, we carried them mostly just for looks. Like Two-Bit with his black-handled switch. None of us had ever really hurt anybody, or wanted to. Just Johnny. And he hadn't wanted to.
Hey, Curtis,
Tim yelled. I jumped.
Which one? I heard Soda yell back.
The big one. Come on over here.
The guy from Brumley looked at me.
What did I tell you?
I watched Derry going toward Tim and the leader of the Brumley boys. He shouldn't be here, I thought suddenly. I shouldn't be here, and Steve shouldn't be here, and Soda shouldn't be here, and Two-Bit shouldn't be here. We're greasers, but not hoods, and we don't belong with this bunch of future convicts. We could end up like them, I thought. We could. And the thought didn't help my headache. I went back to stand with Soda and Steve and Two-Bit then, because the Socias were arriving. Right on time. They came in 4 carloads and filed out silently. I counted 22 of them. There were 20 of us, so I figured the odds were as even as we could get them. Derry always likes to take on 2 at a time anyway. They looked like they were all cut from the same piece of cloth. Clean-shaven with semi-beetle haircuts, wearing striped or checkered shirts with light red or tan-colored jackets or Madras ski jackets. They could just as easily have been going to the movies as to a rumble. That's why people don't ever think to blame the Socias and are always ready to jump on us. We look hoody, and they look decent. It could be just the other way around. Half of the hoods I know are pretty decent guys underneath all that grease. And from what I've heard, a lot of Socias are just cold-blooded mean. But people usually go by looks. They lined up silently, facing us, and we lined up facing them. I looked for Randy, but didn't see him. I hoped he wasn't there. A guy with a Madras shirt stepped up.
Let's get the rules straight. Nothing but our fists, and the first to run, lose, right?
Tim flipped away his beer can.
You savvy real good.
There was an uneasy silence. Who was going to start it? Derry solved the problem. He stepped forward under the circle of light made by the street lamp. For a minute, everything looked unreal, like a scene out of a J.D. movie or something. Then Derry said,
I'll take on anyone.
He stood there, tall, broad-shouldered, his muscles taut under his T-shirt and his eyes glittering like ice. For a second, it looked like there wasn't anyone brave enough to take him on. Then there was a slight stir in the faceless mob of Socias, and a husky blonde guy stepped forward. He looked at Derry and said quietly, Hello, Darryl. Something flickered behind Derry's eyes, and then they were ice again.
Hello, Paul.
I heard Soda give a kind of squeak, and I realized that the blonde was Paul Holden. He had been the best halfback on Derry's football team at high school, and he and Derry used to buddy it around all the time. He must be a junior in college by now, I thought. He was looking at Derry with an expression I couldn't quite place, but disliked. Contempt, pity, hate, all three? Why? Because Darry was standing there representing all of us, and maybe Paul felt only contempt and pity and hate for greasers? Darry hadn't moved a muscle or changed expression, but you could see he hated Paul now. It wasn't only jealousy. Darry had a right to be jealous. He was ashamed to be on our side, ashamed to be seen with the Brumley boys, Shepherd's gang, maybe even us. Nobody realized it but me and Soda. It didn't matter to anyone but me and Soda. That's stupid, I thought swiftly. They've both come here to fight, and they're both supposed to be smarter than that. What difference does the side make? Then Paul said, "I'll take you." And something like a smile crossed Darry's face. I knew Darry had thought he could take Paul any time, but that was 2 or 3 years ago. What if Paul was better now? I swallowed. Neither one of my brothers had ever been beaten in a fight, but I wasn't exactly itching for someone to break the record. They moved in a circle under the light, counterclockwise, eyeing each other, sizing each other up, maybe remembering old faults and wondering if they were still there. The rest of us waited with mounting tension. I was reminded of Jack London's books, you know, where the wolf pack waits in silence for one of two members to go down in a fight. But it was different here. The moment either one swung a punch, the rumble would be on. The silence grew heavier, and I could hear the harsh, heavy breathing of the boys around me. Still, Darry and the Soch walked slowly in a circle. Even I could feel their hatred. They used to be buddies, I thought. They used to be friends, and now they hate each other because one has to work for a living, and the other comes from the west side. They shouldn't hate each other. I don't hate the Soches anymore. They shouldn't hate...
Hold up!
A familiar voice yelled.
Hold it!
Darry turned to see who it was, and Paul swung, a hard right to the jaw that would have felled anyone but Darry. The rumble was on. Dallas Winston ran to join us. I couldn't find a Soch my size, so I took the next best size and jumped on him. Dallas was right beside me, already on top of someone.
I thought you were in the hospital,
I yelled as the Soch knocked me to the ground and I rolled to avoid getting kicked.
I was.
Dally was having a hard time because his left arm was still in bad shape.
I ain't now.
How? I managed to ask as the Soch I was fighting leaped on top of me and we rolled near Dally.
Talk the nurse into it with 2-bit switch. Don't you know a rumble ain't a rumble unless I'm in it?
I couldn't answer because the Soch, who was heavier than I took him for, had pinned me and was slugging the sense out of me. I thought dizzily that he was going to knock some of my teeth loose or break my nose or something, and I knew I didn't have a chance. But Darry was keeping an eye out for me. He caught that guy by the shoulder and half-lifted him up before knocking him 3 feet with a sledgehammer blow. I decided it would be fair for me to help Dally since he could only use one arm. They were slugging it out, but Dallas was getting the worst of it, so I jumped on his Soch's back, pulling his hair and pounding him. He reached back and caught me by the neck and threw me over his head to the ground. Tim Shepherd, who was fighting two at once, accidentally stepped on me, knocking my breath out. I was up again as soon as I got my wind and jumped right back on the Soch, trying my best to strangle him. While he was prying my fingers loose, Dally knocked him backward so that all three of us rolled on the ground, gasping, cussing, and punching. Somebody kicked me hard in the ribs, and I yelped in spite of myself. Some Soch had knocked out one of our bunch and was kicking me as hard as he could, but I had both arms wrapped around the other Soch's neck and refused to let go. Dally was slugging him, and I hung on desperately, although that other Soch was kicking me, and you'd better believe it hurt. Finally, he kicked me in the head so hard it stunned me, and I lay limp, trying to clear my mind and keep from blacking out. I could hear the racket, but only dimly through the buzzing in my ears. Numerous bruises along my back and on my face were throbbing, but I felt detached from the pain, as if it wasn't really me feeling it.
"They're running!" I heard a voice yell joyfully. "Look at the dirty Soches run!"
It seemed to me that the voice belonged to 2-Bit, but I couldn't be sure.
I tried to sit up and saw that the Sochas were getting into their cars and leaving. Tim Shepard was swearing blue and green because his nose was broken again, and the leader of the Brumley boys was working over one of his own men because he had broken the rules and used a piece of pipe in the fighting. Steve lay doubled up and groaning about 10 feet from me. We found out later he had 3 broken ribs. Soda Pop was beside him, talking in a low, steady voice. I did a double take when I saw Two-Bit. Blood was streaming down one side of his face, and one hand was busted wide open, but he was grinning happily because the Sochas were running.
Chapter 10. I walked down the hall in a daze. Dally had taken the car, and I started the long walk home in a stupor. Johnny was dead. But he wasn't. That still body back in the hospital wasn't Johnny. Johnny was somewhere else, maybe asleep in the lot, or playing the pinball machine in the bowling alley, or sitting on the back steps of the church in Windricksville. I'd go home and walk by the lot, and Johnny would be sitting on the curb smoking a cigarette, and maybe we'd lie on our backs and watch the stars. He isn't dead, I said to myself. He isn't dead. And this time my dreaming worked. I convinced myself that he wasn't dead. I must have wandered around for hours, sometimes even out into the street, getting honked at and cussed out. I might have stumbled around all night except for a man who asked me if I wanted a ride. Huh? Oh, yeah, I guess so, I said. I got in. The man, who was in his mid-20s, looked at me. Are you all right, kid? You look like you've been in a fight. I have been. A rumble. I'm okay. Johnny is not dead, I told myself, and I believed it. I hate to tell you this, kiddo, the guy said dryly, but you're bleeding all over my car seats. I blinked. I am? Your head. I reached up to scratch the side of my head where it had been itching for a while, and when I looked at my hand, it was smeared with blood. Gosh, mister, I'm sorry, I said, dumbfounded. Don't worry about it. This wreck's been through worse. What's your address? I'm not about to dump a kid out on the streets this time of night. I told him. He drove me to my house and I got out. Thanks a lot. He waved me on. I'm just naturally a great guy. He vroomed the motor and peeled out. What was left of our gang was in the living room. Steve was stretched out on the sofa, his shirt unbuttoned and his side bandaged. His eyes were closed, but when the door shut behind me, he opened them, and I suddenly wondered if my own eyes looked as feverish and bewildered as his. Soda had a wide cut on his lip and a bruise across his cheek. There was a Band-Aid over Derry's forehead, and he had a black eye. One side of Two-Bit's face was taped up. I found out later he had 4 stitches in his cheek and 7 in his hand where he had busted his knuckles open over a Socia's head. They were lounging around, reading the paper and smoking. Where's the party? I thought dully. Weren't Soda and Steve planning a party after the rumble? They all looked up when I walked in. Derry leaped to his feet. Where have you been? Oh, let's don't start that again, I thought. He stopped suddenly. Pony boy, what's the matter? I looked at all of them, a little frightened. Johnny, he's dead. My voice sounded strange, even to me. But he's not dead, a voice in my head said. We told him about beating the Sochas, and, I don't know, he just died. He told me to stay gold, I remembered. What was he talking about? There was a stricken silence. I don't think any of us had realized how bad off Johnny really had been. Soda made a funny noise and looked like he was going to start crying. Two-Bit's eyes were closed and his teeth were clenched, and I suddenly remembered Dally. Dally pounding on the wall. Dallas is gone, I said. He ran out like the devil was after him. He's going to blow up. He couldn't take it. How can I take it? I wondered. Dally is tougher than I am. Why can I take it when Dally can't? And then I knew. Johnny was the only thing Dally loved. And now Johnny was gone. So he finally broke. Two-Bit spoke everyone's feelings. So even Dally has a breaking point.
I started shaking. Derry said something in a low voice to Soda. "Pony boy," Soda said softly, like he was talking to an injured animal. "You look sick. Sit down." I backed up, just like a frightened animal, shaking my head. "I'm okay." I felt sick. I felt as if any minute I was going to fall flat on my face, but I shook my head. "I don't want to sit down." Derry took a step toward me, but I backed away. "Don't touch me," I said. My heart was pounding in slow thumps, throbbing at the side of my head, and I wondered if everyone else could hear it. Maybe that's why they're all looking at me, I thought. They can hear my heart beating. The phone rang, and after a moment's hesitation, Derry turned from me to it. He said, "Hello?" and then listened. He hung up quickly. It was Dally. He phoned from a booth. "He's just robbed a grocery store and the cops are after him. We gotta hide him. He'll be at the lot in a minute." We all left the house at a dead run, even Steve, and I wondered vaguely why no one was doing somersaults off the steps this time. Things were sliding in and out of focus, and it seemed funny to me that I couldn't run in a straight line. We reached the vacant lot just as Dally came in, running as hard as he could from the opposite direction. The wail of a siren grew louder, and then a police car pulled up across the street from the lot. Doors slammed as the policeman leaped out. Dally had reached the circle of light under the street lamp, and skidding to a halt, he turned and jerked a black object from his waistband. I remembered his voice.
"I've been carrying a heater. It ain't loaded, but it sure does help a bluff."
It was only yesterday that Dally had told Johnny and me that. But yesterday was years ago, a lifetime ago. Dally raised the gun, and I thought, "You blasted fool. They don't know you're only bluffing." And even as the policeman's gun spit fire into the night, I knew that was what Dally wanted. He was jerked half around by the impact of the bullets, then slowly crumpled with a look of grim triumph on his face. He was dead before he hit the ground. But I knew that was what he wanted, even as the lot echoed with the cracks of the shots, even as I begged silently, "Please, not him. Not him and Johnny both." I knew he would be dead. Because Dally Winston wanted to be dead, and he always got what he wanted. Nobody would write editorials praising Dally. Two friends of mine had died that night, one a hero, the other a hoodlum. But I remembered Dally pulling Johnny through the window of the burning church, Dally giving us his gun, although it could mean jail for him, Dally risking his life for us, trying to keep Johnny out of trouble. And now he was a dead juvenile delinquent. And there wouldn't be any editorials in his favor. Dally didn't die a hero. He died violent and young and desperate, just like we all knew he'd die someday. Just like Tim Shepard and Curly Shepard and the Brumley boys and the other guys we knew would die someday. But Johnny was right. He died gallant. Steve stumbled forward with a sob, but Soda caught him by the shoulders. "Easy, buddy, easy," I heard him say softly. "There's nothing we can do now." Nothing we can do. Not for Dally or Johnny or Tim Shepard or any of us. My stomach gave a violent start and turned into a hunk of ice. The world was spinning around me, and blobs of faces and visions of things past were dancing in red mist that covered the lot. It swirled into a mass of colors, and I felt myself swaying on my feet. Someone cried, "Glory! Look at the kid!" And the ground rushed up to meet me very suddenly. When I woke up, it was light. It was awfully quiet. Too quiet. I mean, our house just isn't naturally quiet. The radio's usually going full blast, and the TV is turned up loud, and people are wrestling and knocking over lamps and tripping over the coffee table and yelling at each other. Something was wrong, but I couldn't quite figure it out. Something had happened. I couldn't remember what. I blinked at Soda bewilderedly. He was sitting on the edge of the bed watching me. "Soda?" My voice sounded weak and hoarse. "Is somebody sick?" "Yeah." His voice was oddly gentle. "Go back to sleep now." An idea was slowly dawning on me. "Am I sick?" He stroked my hair. "Yeah, you're sick. Now be quiet." I had one more question. I was still kind of mixed up. "Is Derry sorry I'm sick?" I had a funny feeling that Derry was sad because I was sick. Everything seemed vague and hazy.
Soda gave me a funny look. He was quiet for a moment. Yeah, he's sorry you're sick. Now, please shut up, will you, honey? Go back to sleep. I closed my eyes. I was awful tired. When I woke up next, it was daylight, and I was hot under all the blankets on me. I was thirsty and hungry, but my stomach was so uneasy, I knew I wouldn't be able to hold anything down. Derry had pulled the armchair into the bedroom and was asleep in it. He should be at work, I thought. Why is he asleep in the armchair? Hey, Derry, I said softly, shaking his knee. Hey, Derry, wake up. He opened his eyes.
Pony boy, you okay?
Yeah, I said, I think so. Something had happened, but I still couldn't remember it, although I was thinking a lot clearer than I was the last time I'd waked up. He sighed in relief and pushed my hair back.
Gosh, kid, you had us scared to death.
What was the matter with me? He shook his head.
I told you you were in no condition for a rumble. Exhaustion, shock, minor concussion, and Two-Bit came blubbering over here with some tale about how you were running a fever before the rumble and how it was all his fault you were sick. He was pretty torn up that night,
Derry said. He was quiet for a minute.
We all were.
Then I remembered. Dallas and Johnny were dead. Don't think of them, I thought. Don't remember how Johnny was your buddy. Don't remember that he didn't want to die. Don't think of Dally breaking up in the hospital, crumpling under the streetlight. Try to think that Johnny is better off now. Try to remember that Dally would have ended up like that sooner or later. Best of all, don't think. Blank your mind. Don't remember. Don't remember. Where'd I get a concussion? I said. My head itched, but I couldn't scratch it for the bandage. How long have I been asleep?
You got a concussion from getting kicked in the head. Soda saw it. He landed all over that soche. I've never seen him so mad. I think he could have whipped anyone in the state he was in. Today's Tuesday, and you've been asleep and delirious since Saturday night. Don't you remember?
No, I said slowly. Derry, I'm not ever going to be able to make up the school I've missed. And I've still got to go to court and talk to the police about Bob's getting killed. And now, with Dally, I took a deep breath. Derry, do you think they'll split us up? Put me in a home or something? He was silent.
I don't know, baby.
I just don't know. I stared at the ceiling. What would it be like, I wondered, staring at a different ceiling? What would it be like in a different bed, in a different room? There was a hard, painful lump in my throat that I couldn't swallow.
Don't you even remember being in the hospital?
Derry asked. He was trying to change the subject. I shook my head. I don't remember.
You kept asking for me and Soda. Sometimes for Mom and Dad, too, but mostly for Soda.
Something in his tone of voice made me look at him. Mostly for Soda. Did I ask for Derry at all, or was he just saying that? Derry, I didn't know quite what I wanted to say, but I had a sick feeling that maybe I hadn't called for him while I was delirious. Maybe I had only wanted Soda Pop to be with me. What all had I said while I was sick? I couldn't remember. I didn't want to remember.
Johnny left you his copy of Gone with the Wind, told the nurse he wanted you to have it.
I looked at the paperback lying on the table. I didn't want to finish it. I'd never get past the part where the Southern gentlemen go riding into sure death because they are gallant. Southern gentlemen with big black eyes in blue jeans and T-shirts. Southern gentlemen crumpling under streetlights. Don't remember. Don't try to decide which one died gallant. Don't remember. Where's Soda? I asked. And then I could have kicked myself. Why can't you talk to Derry, you idiot? I said to myself. Why do you feel uncomfortable talking to Derry?
Asleep, I hope. I thought he was going to go to sleep shaving this morning and cut his throat. I had to push him to bed, but he was out like a light in a second.
Derry's hopes that Soda was asleep were immediately ruined because he came running in, clad only in a pair of blue jeans. Hey, pony boy, he yelped and leaped for me, but Derry caught him.
No rough stuff, little buddy.
So Soda had to content himself with bouncing up and down on the bed and pounding on my shoulder.
Gosh, but you were sick. You feel okay now?
I'm okay. Just a little hungry.
I should think you would be,
Derry said.
You wouldn't eat anything most of the time you were sick. How'd you like some mushroom soup?
I suddenly realized just how empty I was. Man, I'd like that just fine.
I'll go make some. Soda Pop, take it easy with him, okay?
Soda looked back at him indignantly. You'd think I was going to challenge him to a track meet or something right off the bat.
Oh, no,
I groaned. Track meet? I guess this just about puts me out of every race. I won't be back in condition for the meets, and the coach was counting on me.
Golly, there's always next year, Soda said.
Soda never has grasped the importance Derry and I put on athletics. Like he has never understood why we went all out for studying.
Don't sweat it about some track meet.
Soda, I said suddenly, what all did I say while I was delirious?
Oh, you thought you were in Windrixville most of the time. Then you kept saying that Johnny didn't mean to kill that Soche.
Hey, I didn't know you didn't like baloney. I went cold. I don't like it. I never liked it. Soda just looked at me. You used to eat it. That's why you wouldn't eat anything while you were sick. You kept saying you didn't like baloney no matter what it was we were trying to get you to eat.
I don't like it, I repeated.
Soda, did I ask for dairy while I was sick?
Yeah, sure, he said, looking at me strangely.
You asked for him and me both, sometimes Mom and Dad, and for Johnny.
Oh, I thought maybe I didn't ask for dairy. It was bugging me.
Soda grinned. Well, you did, so don't worry. We stayed with you so much that the doctor told us we were going to end up in the hospital ourselves if we didn't get some sleep. But we didn't get any anyway.
I took a good look at him. He looked completely worn out. There were circles under his eyes, and he had a tense, tired look to him. Yet his dark eyes were still laughing and carefree and reckless.
You look beat, I said frankly. I bet you ain't had 3 hours sleep since Saturday night.
He grinned, but didn't deny it.
Scoot over.
He crawled over me and flopped down, and before Derry came back in with the soup, we were both asleep.
Chapter 11.
I had to stay in bed a whole week after that. That bugged me. I'm not the kind that can lie around looking at the ceiling all the time. I read most of the time and drew pictures. One day, I started flipping through one of Soda's old yearbooks and came across a picture that seemed vaguely familiar. Not even when I read the name Robert Sheldon did it hit me who it was. And then I finally realized it was Bob. I took a real good long look at it. The picture didn't look a whole lot like the Bob I remembered, but nobody ever looks like his picture in a yearbook anyway. He had been a sophomore that year. That would make him about 18 when he died. Yeah, he was good-looking even then, with a grin that reminded me of Soda's, a kind of a reckless grin. He had been a handsome black-haired boy with dark eyes, maybe brown like Soda's, maybe dark blue like the Shepherd boy's. Maybe he'd had black eyes, like Johnny. I had never given Bob much thought. I hadn't had time to think. But that day I wondered about him. What was he like? I knew he liked to pick fights, had the usual Soche belief that living on the West Side made you Mr. Super Tough, looked good in dark wine-colored sweaters, and was proud of his rings. But what about the Bob Sheldon that Cherry Valance knew? She was a smart girl. She didn't like him just because he was good-looking. Sweet and friendly, stands out from the crowd. That's what she had said. A real person. The best buddy a guy ever had, kept trying to make somebody stop him. Randy had told me that. Did he have a kid brother who idolized him? Maybe a big brother who kept bugging him not to be so wild? His parents let him run wild. Because they loved him too much or too little? Did they hate us now? I hoped they hated us. That they weren't full of that pity the victims of environment junk the social workers kept handing Curly Shepherd every time he got sent off to reform school. I'd rather have anybody's hate than their pity. But then, maybe they understood, like Cherry Valance. I looked at Bob's picture and I could begin to see the person we had killed. A reckless, hot-tempered boy, cocky and scared stiff at the same time.
Pony boy?
Yeah? I didn't look up. I thought it was the doctor. He'd been coming over to see me almost every day, although he didn't do much except talk to me.
There's a guy here to see you. Says he knows you.
Something in Derry's voice made me look up, and his eyes were hard.
His name's Randy.
Yeah, I know him, I said.
You want to see him?
Yeah, I shrugged. Sure, why not? A few guys from school had dropped by to see me. I have quite a few friends at school, even if I am younger than most of them and don't talk much. But that's what they are, school friends, not buddies. I had been glad to see them, but it bothered me because we live in kind of a lousy neighborhood and our house isn't real great. It's run down looking and everything, and the inside's kind of poor looking too, even though for a bunch of boys we do a pretty good job of house cleaning. Most of my friends at school come from good homes, not filthy rich like the Sochas, but middle class anyway. It was a funny thing. It bugged me about my friends seeing our house, but I couldn't have cared less about what Randy thought.
Hi, Pony Boy.
Randy looked uncomfortable standing in the doorway. Hi, Randy, I said. Have a seat if you can find one. Books were lying all over everything. He pushed a couple off a chair and sat down.
How you feeling? Cherry told me your name was on the school bulletin.
I'm okay. You can't really miss my name on any kind of bulletin. He still looked uncomfortable, although he tried to grin. Want a smoke? I offered him a weed, but he shook his head.
No, thanks. Pony Boy, one reason I came here was to see if you were okay, but you... We... Gotta go see the judge tomorrow.
Yeah, I said, lighting a cigarette. I know. Hey, holler if you see one of my brothers coming. I'll catch it for smoking in bed.
My dad says for me to tell the truth and nobody can get hurt. He's kind of upset about all this. I mean, my dad's a good guy and everything, better than most. And I kind of let him down, being mixed up in all this.
I just looked at him. That was the dumbest remark I ever heard anyone make. He thought he was mixed up in this? He didn't kill anyone. He didn't get his head busted in a rumble. It wasn't his buddy that was shot down under a streetlight. Besides, what did he have to lose? His old man was rich. He could pay whatever fine there was for being drunk and picking a fight.
I wouldn't mind getting fined, Randy said. But I feel lousy about the old man. And it's the first time I've felt anything in a long time.
The only thing I'd felt in a long time was being scared. Scared stiff. I'd put off thinking about the judge and the hearing for as long as I could. Soda and Derry didn't like to talk about it either, so we were all silently counting off the days while I was sick, counting the days that we had left together. But with Randy sticking solidly to the subject, it was impossible to think about anything else. My cigarette started trembling.
I guess your folks feel kind of awful about it, too.
My parents are dead. I live here with just Derry and Soda, my brothers. I took a long drag on my cigarette. That's what's worrying me. If the judge decides Derry isn't a good guardian or something, I'm liable to get stuck in a home somewhere. That's the rotten part of this deal. Derry is a good guardian. He makes me study and knows where I am and who I'm with all the time. I mean, we don't get along so great sometimes, but he keeps me out of trouble, or did. My father didn't yell at me as much as he does.
I didn't know that.
Randy looked worried. He really did. A soche, even. Worried because some kid greaser was on his way to a foster home or something. That was really funny.
I don't mean funny. You know what I mean. Listen to me, Pony. You didn't do anything. It was your friend Johnny that had the knife.
I had it. I stopped him. He was looking at me strangely. I had the knife. I killed Bob. Randy shook his head.
I saw it. You were almost drowned. It was the black-headed guy that had the switchblade. Bob scared him into doing it. I saw it.
I was bewildered. I killed him.
I had a switchblade, and I was scared they were going to beat me up.
No, kid, it was your friend, the one who died in the hospital.
Johnny is not dead. My voice was shaking. Johnny is not dead.
Hey, Randy.
Darry stuck his head in the door.
I think you better go now.
Sure,
Randy said. He was still looking at me kind of funny.
See you around, Pony.
Don't ever say anything to him about Johnny,
I heard Darry say in a low voice as they went out.
He's still pretty racked up, mentally and emotionally. The doc said he'd get over it if we gave him time.
I swallowed hard and blinked. He was just like all the rest of the Socs, cold-blooded mean. Johnny didn't have anything to do with Bob's getting killed.
Pony boy Curtis, put out that cigarette.
Okay, okay. I put it out. I ain't gonna go to sleep smoking, Darry. If you make me stay in bed, there ain't anywhere else I can smoke.
You're not gonna die if you don't get a smoke. But if that bed catches on fire, you will. You couldn't make it to the door through that mess.
Well, golly, I can't pick up, and Soda doesn't, so I guess that leaves you. He was giving me one of those looks. All right, I said. That don't leave you. Maybe Soda'll straighten it up a little.
Maybe you can be a little neater, huh, little buddy?
He'd never called me that before. Soda was the only one he ever called little buddy. Sure, I said. I'll be more careful.
Chapter 12.
The hearing wasn't anything like I thought it would be. Besides Darry and Soda and me, nobody was there except Randy and his parents and Cherry Valance and her parents and a couple of the other guys that had jumped Johnny and me that night. I don't know what I expected the whole thing to be like. I guess I've been watching too many Perry Mason shows. Oh, yeah, the doctor was there, and he had a long talk with the judge before the hearing. I didn't know what he had to do with it then, but I do now. First, Randy was questioned. He looked a little nervous, and I wished they'd let him have a cigarette. I wished they'd let me have a cigarette. I was more than a little shaky myself. Darry had told me to keep my mouth shut no matter what Randy and everybody said, that I'd get my turn. All the Socs told the same story and stuck mainly to the truth, except they said Johnny had killed Bob. But I figured I could straighten that point out when I got my turn. Cherry told them what had happened before and after Johnny and I had been jumped. I think I saw a couple of tears slide down her cheeks, but I'm not sure. Her voice was sure steady, even if she was crying. The judge questioned everyone carefully, but nothing real emotional or exciting happened like it does on TV. He asked Darry and Soda a little bit about Dally, I think to check our background and find out what kind of guys we hung out with. Was he a real good buddy of ours? Darry said,
yes, sir,
looking straight at the judge, not flinching. But Soda looked at me like he was sentencing me to the electric chair before he gave the same answer. I was real proud of both of them. Dally had been one of our gang, and we wouldn't desert him. I thought the judge would never get around to questioning me. Man, I was scared almost stiff by the time he did. And you know what? They didn't ask me a thing about Bob's getting killed. All the judge did was ask me if I liked living with Darry, if I liked school, what kind of grades I made, and stuff like that. I couldn't figure it out then, but later I found out what the doctor had been talking to the judge about. I guess I looked as scared as I really was, because the judge grinned at me and told me to quit chewing my fingernails. That's a habit I have. Then he said I was acquitted and the whole case was closed. Just like that. Didn't even give me a chance to talk much. But that didn't bother me a lot. I didn't feel like talking anyway. I wish I could say that everything went back to normal, but it didn't. Especially me. I started running into things, like the door, and kept tripping over the coffee table and losing things. I always have been kind of absent-minded, but man, then I was lucky if I got home from school with the right notebook and with both shoes on. I walked all the way home once in my stocking feet and didn't even notice it until Steve made some bright remark about it.
I guess I'd left my shoes in the locker room at school, but I never did find them. And another thing, I quit eating. I used to eat like a horse, but all of a sudden I wasn't hungry. Everything tasted like bologna. I was lousing up my schoolwork, too. I didn't do too badly in math because Darry checked over my homework in that and usually caught all my mistakes and made me do it again. But in English, I really washed out. I used to make A's in English, mostly because my teacher made us do compositions all the time. I mean, I know I don't talk good English. Have you ever seen a hood that did? But I can write it good when I try. At least I could before. Now I was lucky to get a D on a composition. It bothered my English teacher, the way I was goofing up, I mean. He's a real good guy who makes us think, and you can tell he's interested in you as a person, too. One day he told me to stay in after the rest of the class left. Ponyboy, I'd like to talk to you about your grades. Man, I wished I could beat it out of there. I knew I was flunking out in that class, but golly, I couldn't help it. There's not much to talk about, judging from your scores. Pony, I'll give it to you straight. You're failing this class right now, but taking into consideration the circumstances, if you come up with a good semester theme, I'll pass you with a C grade. Taking into consideration the circumstances? Brother, was that ever a way to tell me he knew I was goofing up because I'd been in a lot of trouble? At least that was a roundabout way of putting it. The first week of school after the hearing had been awful. People I knew wouldn't talk to me, and people I didn't know would come right up and ask about the whole mess. Sometimes even teachers. And my history teacher, she acted as if she was scared of me, even though I'd never caused any trouble in her class. You can bet that made me feel real tough. "Yes, sir," I said. "I'll try. What's the theme supposed to be on?" "Anything you think is important enough to write about. And it isn't a reference theme. I want you to write your own ideas and your own experiences." My first trip to the zoo. Oh, boy, oh, boy. "Yes, sir," I said, and got out of there as fast as I could. At lunch hour, I met Two-Bit and Steve out in the back parking lot, and we drove over to a little neighborhood grocery store to buy cigarettes and Cokes and candy bars. The store was the Grease Hangout, and that was about all we ever had for lunch. The socias were causing a lot of trouble in the school cafeteria, throwing silverware and stuff. And everybody tried to blame it on us greasers. We all got a big laugh out of that. Greasers rarely even eat in the cafeteria. I was sitting on the fender of Steve's car, smoking and drinking a Pepsi while he and Two-Bit were inside talking to some girls, when a car drove up and three socias got out. I just sat there and looked at them and took another swallow of the Pepsi. I wasn't scared. It was the oddest feeling in the world. I didn't feel anything. Scared, mad, or anything. Just zero.
"You're the guy that killed Bob Sheldon," one of them said. "And he was a friend of ours. We don't like nobody killing our friends, especially greasers."
Big deal. I busted the end off my bottle and held on to the neck and tossed away my cigarette. "You get back into your car or you'll get split." They looked kind of surprised, and one of them backed up.
"I mean it."
I hopped off the car. "I've had about all I can take from you guys." I started toward them, holding the bottle the way Tim Shepard holds a switch, out and away from myself in a loose but firm hold. I guess they knew I meant business because they got into their car and drove off.
"You really would have used that bottle, wouldn't you?"
Two-Bit had been watching from the store doorway.
"Steve and me were backing you, but I guess we didn't need to. You'd have really cut them up, huh?"
"I guess so," I said with a sigh. I didn't see what Two-Bit was sweating about. Anyone else could have done the same thing, and Two-Bit wouldn't have thought about it twice.
"Pony boy, listen. Don't get tough. You're not like the rest of us, and don't try to be."
What was the matter with Two-Bit? I knew as well as he did that if you got tough, you didn't get hurt. Get smart, and nothing can touch you.
"What in the world are you doing?"
Two-Bit's voice broke into my thoughts. I looked up at him. "Picking up the glass." He stared at me for a second, then grinned.
"You little son of a gun," he said in a relieved voice.
I didn't know what he was talking about, so I just went on picking up the glass from the bottle end and put it in a trash can. I didn't want anyone to get a flat tire. I tried to write that theme when I got home. I really did, mostly because Darry told me to or else. I thought about writing about Dad, but I couldn't. It's going to be a long time before I can even think about my parents. A long time. I tried writing about Soda's horse, Mickey Mouse, but I couldn't get it right. It always came out sounding corny. So I started writing names across the paper. Darryl Shane Curtis, Jr. Soda Patrick Curtis. Pony Boy Michael Curtis. Then I drew horses all over it. That was going to get a good grade, like all get out. "Hey, the mail come in yet?" Soda slammed the door and yelled for the mail, just the way he does every day when he comes home from work. I was in the bedroom, but I knew he would throw his jacket toward the sofa and miss it, take off his shoes, and go into the kitchen for a glass of chocolate milk, because that's what he does every day of his life. He always runs around in his stocking feet. He doesn't like shoes. Then he did a funny thing. He came in and flopped down on the bed and started smoking a cigarette. He hardly ever smokes, except when something is really bugging him or when he wants to look tough. And he doesn't have to impress us. We know he's tough. So I figured something was bothering him. "How was work?"
"Okay."
"Something wrong?" He shook his head. I shrugged and went back to drawing horses. Soda cooked dinner that night, and everything came out right. That was unusual, because he's always trying something different. One time we had green pancakes. Green! I can tell you one thing. If you've got a brother like Soda Pop, you're never bored. All through supper, Soda was quiet, and he didn't eat much. That was really unusual. Most of the time you can't shut him up, or fill him up. Darry didn't seem to notice, so I didn't say anything. Then after supper, me and Darry got into a fuss about the fourth one we'd had that week. This one started because I hadn't done anything on that theme, and I wanted to go for a ride. It used to be that I'd just stand there and let Darry yell at me, but lately I'd been yelling right back. "What's the sweat about my schoolwork?" I finally shouted. "I'll have to get a job as soon as I get out of school anyway. Look at Soda. He's doing okay, and he dropped out. You can just lay off."
"You're not going to drop out. Listen, with your brains and grades, you could get a scholarship and we could put you through college. But schoolwork's not the point. You're living in a vacuum, Pony, and you're going to have to cut it out. Johnny and Dallas were our buddies too, but you don't just stop living because you lose someone. I thought you knew that by now. You don't quit. And any time you don't like the way I'm running things, you can get out."
I went tight and cold. We never talked about Dallas or Johnny. "You'd like that, wouldn't you? You'd like me to just get out. Well, it's not that easy, is it, Soda?" But when I looked at Soda, I stopped. His face was white, and when he looked at me, his eyes were wide with a pained expression. I suddenly remembered Curly Shepherd's face when he slipped off a telephone pole and broke his arm.
"Don't! Oh, you guys, why can't you—"
He jumped up suddenly and bolted out the door. Darry and I were struck dumb. Darry picked up the envelope that Soda had dropped.
"It's the letter he wrote Sandy," Darry said without expression, returned unopened.
So that was what had been bugging Soda all afternoon, and I hadn't even bothered to find out. And while I was thinking about it, I realized that I never had paid much attention to Soda's problems. Darry and I just took it for granted that he didn't have any.
When Sandy went to Florida, it wasn't Soda, Pony Boy. He told me he loved her, but I guess she didn't love him like he thought she did, because it wasn't him.
"You don't have to draw me a picture," I said.
He wanted to marry her anyway, but she just left.
Darry was looking at me with a puzzled expression.
"Why didn't he tell you? I didn't think he'd tell Steve or Two-Bit, but I thought he'd told you everything."
"Maybe he tried," I said. How many times had Soda started to tell me something, only to find I was daydreaming or stuck in a book? He would always listen to me, no matter what he was doing.
He cried every night that week you were gone, Derry said slowly. Both you and Sandy in the same week.
He put the envelope down. Come on, let's go after him.
We chased him clear to the park. We were gaining on him, but he had a block's head start.
Circle around and cut him off, Derry ordered. Even out of condition, I was the best runner. I'll stay right behind him.
I headed through the trees and cut him off halfway across the park. He veered off to the right, but I caught him in a flying tackle before he'd gone more than a couple of steps. It knocked the wind out of both of us. We lay there gasping for a minute or two, and then Soda sat up and brushed the grass off his shirt.
You should have gone out for football instead of track.
Where did you think you were going?
I lay flat on my back and looked up at him. Derry came up and dropped down beside us.
Soda shrugged.
I don't know. It's just, I can't stand to hear y'all fight. Sometimes I just have to get out or, it's like I'm the middle man in a tug of war, and I'm being split in half, you dig?
Derry gave me a startled look. Neither of us had realized what it was doing to Soda to hear us fight. I was sick and cold with shame. What he said was the truth. Derry and I did play tug of war with him, with never a thought to how much it was hurting him. Soda was fiddling with some dead grass.
I mean, I can't take sides. It'd be a lot easier if I could, but I see both sides. Derry yells too much and tries too hard and takes everything too serious. And Pony Boy, you don't think enough. You don't realize all Derry's given up just to give you a chance he missed out on. He could have stuck you in a home somewhere and worked his way through college. Pony Boy, I'm telling you the truth. I dropped out because I'm dumb. I really did try in school, but you saw my grades. Look, I'm happy working in a gas station with cars. You'd never be happy doing something like that. And Derry, you ought to try to understand him more and quit bugging him about every little mistake he makes. He feels things differently than you do. He gave us a pleading look. Golly, you two, it's bad enough having to listen to it, but when you start trying to get me to take sides...
Tears welled up in his eyes. We're all we've got left. We ought to be able to stick together against everything. If we don't have each other, we don't have anything. If you don't have anything, you end up like Dallas, and I don't mean dead either. I mean like he was before. And that's worse than dead, please.
He wiped his eyes on his arm. Don't fight anymore.
Derry looked real worried. I suddenly realized that Derry was only 20, that he wasn't so much older, that he couldn't feel scared or hurt and as lost as the rest of us. I saw that I had expected Derry to do all the understanding without even trying to understand him, and he had given up a lot for Soda and me.
Sure, little buddy, Derry said softly. We're not going to fight anymore.
Hey, Pony Boy!
Soda gave me a tearful grin.
Don't you start crying, too. One ball baby in the family's enough. I'm not crying, I said.
Maybe I was. I don't remember. Soda gave me a playful punch on the shoulder.
No more fights. Okay, Pony Boy?
Derry said.
Okay,
I said. And I meant it. Derry and I would probably still have misunderstandings. We were too different not to. But no more fights. We couldn't do anything to hurt Soda. Soda Pop would always be the middleman, but that didn't mean he had to keep getting pulled apart. Instead of Derry and me pulling him apart, he'd be pulling us together.
Well, Soda said, I'm cold. How about going home?
Race you, I challenged, leaping up.
It was a real nice night for a race. The air was clear and cold, and so clean it almost sparkled. The moon wasn't out, but the stars lit up everything. It was quiet except for the sound of our feet on the cement and the dry, scraping sound of leaves blowing across the street. It was a real nice night. I guess I was still out of shape because we all three tied. No, I guess we all just wanted to stay together. I still didn't want to do my homework that night, though. I hunted around for a book to read, but I'd read everything in the house about 50 million times, even Derry's copy of The Carpetbaggers, though he told me I wasn't old enough to read it. I thought so, too, after I finished it. Finally, I picked up Gone with the Wind and looked at it for a long time. I knew Johnny was dead. I had known it all the time, even while I was sick and pretending he wasn't. It was Johnny, not me, who had killed Bob. I knew that, too. I had just thought that maybe if I played like Johnny wasn't dead, it wouldn't hurt so much. The way Two-Bit, after the police had taken Dally's body away, had griped because he had lost his switchblade when they searched Dallas.
"Is that all that's bothering you, that switchblade?"
a red-eyed Steve had snapped at him. "No," Two-Bit had said with a quivering sigh. "But that's what I'm wishing was all that's bothering me." But it still hurt anyway. You know a guy a long time, and I mean really know him. You don't get used to the idea that he's dead just overnight. Johnny was something more than a buddy to all of us. I guess he had listened to more beefs and more problems from more people than any of us. A guy that'll really listen to you, listen and care about what you're saying, is something rare. And I couldn't forget him telling me that he hadn't done enough, hadn't been out of our neighborhood all his life. And then it was too late. I took a deep breath and opened the book. A slip of paper fell out on the floor and I picked it up. "Pony boy, I asked the nurse to give you this book so you could finish it." It was Johnny's handwriting. I went on reading, almost hearing Johnny's quiet voice. "The doctor came in a while ago, but I knew anyway. I keep getting tireder and tireder. Listen, I don't mind dying now. It's worth it. It's worth saving those kids. Their lives are worth more than mine. They have more to live for. Some of their parents came by to thank me, and I know it was worth it. Tell Dally it's worth it. I'm just going to miss you guys. I've been thinking about it, and that poem, that guy that wrote it, he meant you're gold when you're a kid, like green. When you're a kid, everything's new, dawn. It's just when you get used to everything that it's day. Like the way you dig sunsets, pony, that's gold. Keep that way. It's a good way to be. I want you to tell Dally to look at one. He'll probably think you're crazy, but ask for me. I don't think he's ever really seen a sunset. And don't be so bugged over being a greaser. You still have a lot of time to make yourself be what you want. There's still lots of good in the world. Tell Dally. I don't think he knows. Your buddy, Johnny." Tell Dally. It was too late to tell Dally. Would he have listened? I doubted it. Suddenly, it wasn't only a personal thing to me. I could picture hundreds and hundreds of boys living on the wrong sides of cities, boys with black eyes who jumped at their own shadows, hundreds of boys who maybe watched sunsets and looked at stars and ached for something better. I could see boys going down under streetlights because they were mean and tough and hated the world, and it was too late to tell them that there was still good in it, and they wouldn't believe you if you did. It was too vast a problem to be just a personal thing. There should be some help. Someone should tell them before it was too late. Someone should tell their side of the story, and maybe people would understand then and wouldn't be so quick to judge a boy by the amount of hair oil he wore. It was important to me. I picked up the phone book and called my English teacher. "Mr. Syme, this is Pony Boy. That theme, how long can it be?"
"Why, not less than 5 pages.
He sounded a little surprised. I'd forgotten that it was late at night. "Can it be longer?"
"Certainly, Pony Boy, as long as you want it."
"Thanks," I said and hung up. I sat down and picked up my pen and thought for a minute, remembering. Remembering a handsome, dark boy with a reckless grin and a hot temper. A tough, tow-headed boy with a cigarette in his mouth.